making sure that you have your pitch down and like rehearsing so much, I think that's like pretty important, because you have 15 minutes to tell your story and like why people should invest in your movie. So it's like better be good and succinct.
Hello, welcome to Leedy Ladies. Today we have on our podcast Apoorva Sharon. She was originally born in India and raised in Northern California. Apoorva started her career working on a few little gigs like Asia's Got Talent, Thailand's Got Talent, X Factor, Indonesia. So she's been on some pretty major network stuff. And because she's so passionate about her storytelling, she started getting her MFA at Columbia University and kick off her career. She has been a producer of over 20 short films, including Lonely Blue Night, starring Diana Lynn, which you can find on HBO. Apoorva has had all her films in all the major film festivals and was selected in the inaugural program at the Film Independent called Project Involve in 2019, and the list goes on. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Apoorva Sharon to our Leading Ladies podcast today.
I've never had my bio read out to me like that.
Oh my God, it's extensive. Yes.
I'm like, oh.
And are you blushing?
I don't know if the lighting is still not, you can tell, yeah.
So what was the inspiration? You obviously knew you always wanted to be a producer. Like, what about the film industry was like, that's it. That's what I want to do.
So I started off producing plays in high school and college just because it was like a fun thing to do. And I enjoyed it so much. And I was like, well, I hope I can make a career out of this. And when I started working in TV in Singapore, I really felt like I had found my industry. Like, it's a fun industry. Like, you're constantly working with people, you're hearing their stories. I think the thing that made me want to work in film is the ability of storytelling to kind of change people's perspective, like, and how it can bring people together. I mean, the pandemic has changed how we watch movies a lot, but I think one of my favorite things is like when I go to a movie theater and I watch a movie with a bunch of people, and after the movie, you get to talk to your friends about how that movie impacted you. And it's like, after those 2 hours, you've kind of changed a little bit as a person. Like, that movie has made you feel different emotions. You relate to different characters. You've seen a part of the world that maybe you're not really used to. So I think like the ability of film to like bring people together and change perspectives, I think is what drew me to the craft.
Do you have a story that you'd like to tell one of these days?
Do you mean as a writer?
Yeah, like your story.
I don't know. So I really enjoy being like the creative support system for like the writers and directors that I work with. Maybe there's like one or two ideas that I have that are still like very early, but I'm not sure if I want to write them because I want them to be good. And I'm like, maybe I would co-write them with a friend, or maybe I would, you know, with like a writer friend, or maybe I would bring someone else, because so much of what I do as a producer and in developing scripts is critiquing them and figuring out how to make them better. And I don't know if I would be as unbiased if it was my own script.
Well, yeah, we are the most critical of our own selves.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you were born in India. When did you move to California?
So I have like a weird trajectory. So I was born in India, and then I moved to California in the Bay Area when I was 6 years old. And then I ended up moving back to India for high school because we had a sick grandmother that my family wanted to care for. So I was back in India for high school. And then I went to Singapore for college, and I was there for 6 years, 4 years for school, and then 2 years when I was working in TV there. And then I moved to New York for grad school, and then graduated and finally made it out to LA in 2018. And now I'm not leaving California. I make so much fun of my parents because I was like, I could have just gone from like the Bay Area to LA. Like I didn't need to go to all of them.
Yes, yes.
Well, was it because your dad's in the military or why did you guys go back?
No, we went because my grandmother, my dad's mom was very ill. And like my dad wanted to be like closer to her and be able to take care of her in like the last few years of her life. So very like family, personal reasons.
Wow. Okay. And how often do you get back now?
I actually go back pretty frequently. I'm usually there for most of December. Cause I have friends from high school.
Wow.
I'm very, very close to
them. Oh yeah.
And I still have a parent left and I have a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles. So December is my India month where I go like stay with friends and hang out with them. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, how's it feel to have a movie that you produced on HBO? Like, we got to talk about that.
Yes.
It's a short film. And it's very, very exciting. I didn't think that we would end up there. I think we were just focused on making a good short, because especially with shorts, you never know what's going to happen. Like most of the time they just go to a couple festivals and then disappear. And they're calling cards for the director and for a producer to be able to be like, here's what I've made. But apart from that, or it's often like a proof of concept for a feature, but apart from that, it's pretty rare for like a short to get distribution. So yes. HBO has this program called APA Visionaries that they do every year where they pick like three or four shorts every year. And so ours was one of the shorts for like, I guess 2 years ago now, or last year. I lost track of time. So
yeah, we've lost a year with the pandemic. It's like you just, whatever, if you say last year, just add two. If you say two, add three.
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness.
I'm proud of, so I'm glad people get to watch it.
Yes. Exciting. Especially being a woman.
I don't have HBO, so I haven't got to watch it yet, but it does look good and I do want to watch it. So if you have a screener, you can send our way.
Yes, definitely.
I'll send you a link for sure.
Oh, thank you. What advice would you, far as, you know, being in LA, you have so many inspiring people want to be film producers, and the biggest thing is to get distribution. What advice would you give? You know, that's what we're about. You know, what advice would you give someone trying to just even knowing the direction to go to get? I know you said APA, you know, they have that, HBO have it every year, but outside of that, what recommendation would you go to even go towards pitching to get distribution for a feature film or a short film?
So it's very, very different for both a short and a feature.
Right.
For shorts, I've only like, out of the many, many shorts I've produced, I think only like three or four have ever gotten distribution.
Okay.
Other ones that have gotten distribution have all been for very different reasons. So one was because the film was about a life coach who's going through kind of his own crisis. And very interestingly, this like spiritual platform decided to pick it up just because it was such a niche audience.
Okay. And
like a topic that they felt their audience would connect with.
Right.
But I think for a short film, the most important thing is the festival it premieres at, because that will kind of set up the trajectory for other festival programmers seeing it, inviting you to festivals, or you submitting to various other festivals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you know, like in an amazing situation, you're winning awards, but if not, you're getting screened at a bunch of places. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully they're, you know, someone will reach out to you and say, hey, we're interested in picking up your short. But it's not like there's no money in shorts distribution. Like,
no.
Yeah.
But
just to get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I know that it's hard, cause I know that, I submitted my short film Gritty to several, film festivals, and a lot of people was like, oh, why would you want to do film festivals? Just to get it out there. For me, it's the feedback that was, because I'm in the process of doing the feature now. And I just got a wealth of feedback, criticism, and things like that, that's helping me produce the feature.
Yeah.
And I would love to do the And I always tell people it's good to do like a year of the film festival run just to see, because you never know what may happen at the film festivals, who is going to be at the film festivals, the major players, the check writers, you know, they're especially at the major film festivals and meeting other film producers and, you know, that networking. So I always say go to the film festivals.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. I think for going to the film festivals that you're playing at is key.
And
feature producers do watch a bunch of shorts because they're always looking for new talent.
So. Yep. Yep.
Well, I've heard from writers that they think that for them as writers, that it's not, the festivals aren't good for them in that way.
Right.
To showcase them.
To be fair, like they're right, because a short very often showcases a writer director's ability or a director's ability. It's not like no one's really watching a short and thinking, wow, the writing is so good, but it's kind of a double-edged sword, because when you're trying to like finance a feature, what you're really going out with is your feature script and like reports from the director. And if it's like a first time director, they're very often writing the script too. So
yeah,
interesting, because you need to be able to write both a good short and a good feature if you also want to direct it. But I think if you're just a writer, you're better off working on your writing samples and, you know, trying to get into a writer's room at an entry level position and working your way up, as opposed to doing the film festival route.
Yeah.
So do you have a desire to be a director yourself, or are you wanting to stay more behind the scenes and producing?
Yeah, I have no desire to be a director. I love working with directors. I get along really well with directors, but I never want to direct a film. We were forced to, for the experience of like understanding the directing process, we all had to direct shorts at Columbia. And I like enjoyed it a little bit then, but I don't think it's what I want to do. Like I definitely want to be a producer writer. Like I said, like I wouldn't mind co-writing with some of my friends, and I do that on occasion, but I think producing is like my main lane, the bread and butter, like what I focus on building is like a career.
Is there a difference in the way we produce things here versus in India? Yeah. Like what it was like in from different country.
So I've produced so far in India, Singapore, and Pakistan outside of America. And very different in every country because people are different. Like there are major cultural differences that you have to account for, because like the pace of like the way people work, and it depends on the industry. So for example, India has like a pretty robust film industry, right? Bollywood is so huge. So I produced a short in Bombay, in Mumbai, and like the rates I was paying were like New York rates because there's so much work there. And everyone knows what like production is their strong suit. Like I wouldn't say like maybe development and pre-production, but maybe that's not what their focus is. But like in the short space that I was playing in, like people know how to like hustle and get things done and like make a production happen. Similar for Pakistan, I would say like Pakistan too, there's like a, like the film industry is like just now kind of being formed. Like that's a country that puts out like 3 movies a year, maybe. So there isn't a lot of like technical film crew. There's a lot of like TV crew, but there's not a lot of film crew. And so again, it's like people there are just now learning how to prep a feature. You know, like a lot of like the paperwork and the pre-production work that we do here is not, they don't do it there, but again, like they know how to like do production, if that makes sense. Like the data.
Is there unions like we have here?
Yeah, is it a union?
India has unions, I believe. I'm not 100% sure. Pakistan does not have unions. And Singapore, again, like very small country, very like there is crew that comes from like the commercial and TV world, not so much film. Again, I don't think there are unions. I might be mistaken. I'm not sure actually. So, but I think but like people are different kind of everywhere. So like Singaporeans have like, it's not a stereotype, I guess, because it's positive, but are known to be like very efficient. And so like our set was like so crisp and everyone knew exactly what they were doing. And there, you know, there was no like overlapping of roles. Whereas in sometimes like Pakistan, which is still really like understanding film structure and stuff, like people would not know maybe sometimes that you're not supposed to speak to the actors and give them notes because that's the director's job. Stuff like that. Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
Are you the only one in your family that's in the arts? Is like there artistry that runs in your family?
So there's a little bit. I try not to advertise it, but my dad produced a couple of features back in India many, many, many years ago. But it was way ahead of his time because he was, you know, producing art house films in like 2006 when there were no streamers, there's no Netflix, like no one really cared about art films in India at that time, or at least like not like regional art cinema. So he was very ahead of his time.
Wow.
I think the only thing that like that I think about is like, oh, it made life easier for me when I like went to explain like, I want to be a filmmaker. I want to be a producer. They were like, okay, yeah, we know what that is. And we know what that's like. In short, you know, it was like a foreign concept of like me wanting to do this.
Well, what's your favorite part about producing?
Yeah.
My favorite part. I really, really enjoy the development process. I think when you get to like sit with like a writer and you're breaking down like story beats and character and talking about emotion and like, where is this coming from? And why do we want to say this? Like, I think that part is like really, really rewarding. And then when you see it, like when you see the movie that you made and you're like, oh my God, like this didn't exist like a year or two ago. And now we have like this whole movie that we made that people get to like experience.
Yes.
Also very, very rewarding.
Yes, it is. So like me, after I do something, are you able to go back and sit and watch your movies and critique it? Or once you film it, it's like, you know what? I don't want to see it anymore. I want to move on to the next. Are you that type of producer?
So I think it takes me a little while. Like if it's a feature, like I'll definitely be watching my dailies and stuff because I want to know what's happening and I have to report back to the RPs and stuff.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
I do take a little while, to be honest, just because as much as I love producing, like it is a strain on your body and mind. And so a couple of weeks after you wrap, I think I'm just like sinking into my bed. And then eventually when like I would rather watch like a first or second cut, honestly, and then start giving my notes from there.
Okay.
Like you have your time with it. And it's also like, you know, short film, like cinema, like is very much the director's vision and like a director's art form. So I'm like, you take your time with it. You figure out, you know, what story you want to tell, how you want to do this. And then I will definitely come in and give you my notes, but I don't want to like get my fingers in there too early.
Yeah. I feel you on that. I was just telling a friend last night, that don't give me the first pass at an edit. Like, I don't want to, we'll be here 5 years later and we won't have anything because I just can't decide. Like, trying to redo my reel and stuff. Oh my goodness, I spend days. I'm like, I just have to have someone do it. But then I can clean it up. Like, a second, third, fourth look. Like, I can just see it, like, what's not working and how to, okay, cut here, switch that, like, you know, do this little fun little editing, you know, thing. It's like, I can see that so well. So I feel like everyone has a different vision and that's how we all come together and tell the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. So how is New York different? We've talked about India, Singapore, LA.
New York is so the home for indie film and like independent filmmaking. Everyone there, it's you really do feel like the struggling artist vibe there. Like all, like everyone's cold. Everyone's trying to make movies in the cold. Like it's snowing, and you're like trying to protect your camera.
yeah,
but there's also kind of like not to say that there isn't honesty in the filmmaking in LA, but LA is an industry town. Like you have studios who are trying to make, like people are trying to make money with this as like being their like form to like sustain themselves and stuff. And people do that in, of course, in New York too, but it's just, it feels like the art maybe drives you a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
In New York. Mm. And I think in LA, like it's easy to get caught up in like the Hollywood politics of it all. And it's like which studio do you work at? Like, who's your rep? Like all of that stuff. Like suddenly all of that stuff pops into like conversation a little more easily than I think it would if you were in New York.
How do you handle that for yourself?
I think you just have to like stay grounded and know that there's like a whole world outside of LA. And I think it's actually really helpful to remember that. Especially right now, I think with like non-English language content, like blowing up around, like it's around the world, right? Like everybody watched Squid Game, everybody watched Parasite. Like, and I think like a couple of years ago, people in LA were like, oh, no one's going to like read subtitles. And it's like, but now you are. So it's like, be open to that. Realize that like the world is like a big place and you don't have to conform to like the LA way of trying to do business. So.
Yeah. So which Squid Games do you watch it in American or subtitles or which way do you watch it?
So yeah.
You have to do it.
Yeah. I watched it with Korean dialogue, but with English subtitles.
Mm, wow. Okay. And that's a better way to watch it. Everyone keeps saying like, cause you want to hear what they're actually saying. Cause the translation and the American sub voices, it's not the same meaning.
Yeah. And it's also, I'm always like, okay, but like, are you getting like the actor's like real emotion? Like I want to hear your voice. So
Yeah.
So your dad, I'm sure your dad was a huge role model and, you know, sparked you getting into production, but are there any leading ladies or role models that inspired you along your path?
Absolutely. I think there's so many women I look up to, and honestly, like, I'm sure like they had it harder in the industry than we do now. But I think like Molly Asher is a producer I really, really look up to. She produced, Nomadland, and she also produced like Chloe Zhao's like other two films. And so just in terms of like how you build a relationship with a director and stay true to kind of like the art that you want to make, like I think I really respect her as a producer. I love Dani Melia. She produced The Farewell. And she's now Lulu Wang's producing partner, just in terms of just like, again, like somebody who like it. I think the thing that I love about both of these women is that they like, they do the work, like they show up every day and read the scripts and give the notes and go to set. And it's like, no one's like phoning it in. So I think I really, really admire that.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to look them up.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with their work.
They're both amazing, amazing producers. And honestly, like I have a long list of producers that I admire.
Yeah.
Everyone. There's just so many women to look up to.
Okay, so now that you have your role models and people that you look up to, what advice would you give yourself, you know, when if you could go back and have like, okay, I wish I knew that sooner or I started with that information?
You know, I kind of wouldn't give myself any advice because I think that the mistakes that I made were so helpful in like growing and learning to not do that. And so I'm almost like, I'm like, oh, I'm glad I got burned because I learned this lesson now, as opposed to like, just like avoiding the lesson. And then maybe I'd like forget the advice later and then, you know, make that mistake when at a time when it wouldn't be good for my career. So,
yeah.
So I'm like, I'm glad I like, you know, messed up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we have to, because sometimes we can't always learn from other people. I have two older brothers, so I learned a lot from them of what not to do. So I got to make my own mistakes.
Yeah.
And you have a big family, correct?
No, I'm an only child, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But grandchildren or nieces and nephews, no?
Yes. So I have a lot of cousins. I'm the youngest of 16 grandkids on my mom's side of the family. And then there's, I don't know, I've never counted on my dad's side, but there's a sizable number there too.
And are they all in America or they're spread out over India as well?
Spread out between India and the US.
Okay. You think you're gonna do something major one day back either Singapore or India, like a just a major film festival, the experience and
A Bollywood style.
yeah, style, yeah.
I don't know if I would make a Bollywood movie. I would love to do like a big budget film one day. But I think it would have to, like, the story would have to justify the budget. I don't know if I'd want to do it for the sake of having it be like a big budget. But if like the story demanded a lot of production value, then yes, absolutely, I would love.
Wow.
And so what's your genre? Like, if you could produce like a rom-com or a thriller or something, like what's like, okay, that's what I want to do. What work on those types.
So I actually say that I'm genre agnostic. I love, like, there's so many different genres that I love to watch and that I'd love to make and work in. But I do think the one thing that I look for is like, does this story compel me? Does it make me feel something? Do I re like relate to these characters? But I think those are probably like the questions I ask myself as opposed to thinking about genre, because we watch so many different kinds of stuff. So I'd love to make different kinds of stuff too.
So what's next? What's next on your plate?
So, well, I just produced my first feature, so we're in post-production now, and I think it's going to take probably like until the fall of this year to finish the film and get it out to film festivals. So I'm still really working on that. And then I have a series that I'm developing with a writer friend, and a series that I'm a feature, sorry, that I'm co-writing with that same writer friend. So
Are
we've
you allowed to tell us what it's about?
yeah so there's a series called Horizon, which is about a young woman who it's set in Mumbai, and she dreams of being the city's like biggest architect, and she comes from a very humble background. And so that's Horizon. And then the feature is like, it's a horror, it's like a horror thriller type film, and it's kind of like a dark look at like patriarchy and in the South Asian community, but with like supernatural elements. And then there's a Korean series that I'm working on that we're trying to like set up, which is a sci-fi romance.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
Think like zombie attacks and test tubes.
Oh my goodness, that is just wow. Just how do you find the time with, like, because I have 24 hours and Trina has 24 hours. I mean, do you have 24 hours or just to get it done and to be laser focused and do tell, please.
I think it's important to build a slate of projects because not every project that you want to make is going to get made. So, I try to like that's the way like small production companies and even large studios do it. So, as like an independent producer, I would like encourage people to think that way, where it's like, okay, like what are like my 10, 12 projects? Like, and part of it should be, some of it should be stuff that's in like early development that you're spending time like working with the writer, finding the story and figuring out how to shape it. And then some of it should ideally be stuff that's like a little bit later in development that you're ready to either take to financing partners or studios or networks. And then hopefully you have some stuff that's almost ready to go, that's like ready to go into production. And hopefully you have some stuff that's in post. So that's like the dream scenario. So I think that's what I'm trying to like build towards. So trying to just like build like a wide variety of projects, because no one knows what's going to get made ever. Like, people say they know, but nobody knows what's going to get made.
Yeah, do you think it's important to show like the American Indian family and how it's not typical to or the traditional that we're used to
Yeah, I think
here?
like representation in all its forms is important. So I think it could be American Indian, it could be Asian Americans, it could be South American Americans, like it could re or like it could be people who are differently abled and like, or who come from like maybe socioeconomic classes that we don't usually see. So I think like representation in all of its forms. But I think what I really care about is representation going hand in hand with like the craftsmanship of filmmaking or screenwriting, because I think very often you like the representation is great, but I don't want to do the represent like that community a disservice by putting out something subpar. So I would be like, yes, representation, but holding hands with craftsmanship.
Now, I know now we as filmmakers, I think the hardest thing that it is, because you said having, you know, projects in the backlog, but I think a lot of it is financing, getting things out. That's what holds a lot of people out, hold a lot of filmmakers back because they don't have the financing. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you ever experienced that, or can you give some light on where?
Yeah, I'll share some of that. So I was very lucky because okay. I think that a lot of my shorts I was able to produce while I was in film school, which meant that we were applying for grants that film school gave out, or we had access to a lot of resources.
Okay.
We're all crewing up on each other's films. So it's not like you're hiring a whole team and, mm-hmm. You know, you have access mm-hmm. to like edit suites and stuff like that at school. And then I think once I left school, I think there were a couple different ways that I helped finance shorts. Crowdfunding, yes. I also think crowdfunding gets tired really quickly because at the end of the day, like we all have like limited networks. Like I would be going to like the same 10 cousins over and over again.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. after like one or two shorts, I think they're just like, why are we doing this for you? So,
yes.
And then there are some short film grants out there that are helpful. So I think literally like Googling short film grants
mm-hmm.
and then we did this for a short film that Joel and I worked on together, but you can set up like a 501c. So you have to work with a 501c3 company like Film Independent and stuff like that. And so you apply to them and they'll help you set up a web page where essentially anyone who like contributes to your film will get like a tax deduction because they're a nonprofit. So,
okay.
And then there are companies like Google and Disney and stuff that do matching grants. So like, if you can go ask like a friend who works at Google to like, hey, can you make this donation for me? And like, you know, it's like a little crappy. And I mean, it's not illegal, to be fair. It's not illegal. But it's like a little, like slightly like a gray area, because essentially what you're asking people to do is like, hey, make this donation for like $6,000 on my behalf because you're a Google employee. And then Google matches that money.
Okay, but I heard they have like a cap every year.
Yeah.
Like
they do. So I think they have a cap for like the employee. So unless like most people are not like getting up to their cap, and it's pretty high, like Disney's like $25,000. Like there's a bunch of places, and you can find like a list of companies that do matching grants online. And so that's a way that like a lot of people raise funds for short films, because otherwise where are you finding
mm-hmm.
money, especially when there's no true recoupment model.
Right.
For films, yeah, it's very, very hard to find financing. I think it's like the first step would be to actually understand who has equity to put into films. And that's what a lot of people build their careers around. I mean, like there are agents at WME and CAA whose entire job is to maintain relationships with folks who have financing and then connect them with projects. And then the other thing I would say is like to understand when your project is ready to find financing, because mm-hmm. if you go too early in the process, and the material isn't where it needs to be, you know, you've lost an opportunity.
Yeah.
And also understanding like where's like the appropriate forum. So there's places like Fast Track, which Film Independent does, and then IFP and Gotham, they all have their own version. Sundance has its own version where you can apply and if you're selected as a project, like they'll set you up on meetings with producers and ideally partners who can like help you further to like get your movie made. Like it's not like they're going to commit to, you know, financing your whole film, but like
right.
is it like a big producer attachment or a company attachment that can help you, or is it and like yeah. I would say like the odds are slim. Like I think like I went through one of these labs, and it's like you take 60 meetings over 3 days, and mm-hmm. I think maybe we had one person who was interested in us. So
was that nerve-wracking?
It wasn't so much like I wasn't like scared to like meet people or nervous or anxious to like meet people, because they're people at the end of the day and they're here to like hear about your project because they're looking for stuff too. But I think making sure that you have your pitch down and like rehearsing so much, I think that's like pretty important, because you have 15 minutes to tell your story and like why people should invest in your movie. So it's like better be good and succinct.
That A game better be ready.
I've heard that some people may have had a subpar script, but then the pitch game was on it, where they had people like, let me write the check. So, you know, you're right. Yeah. It's the pitch, but I always believe in investing in a good script, because it can land on someone's desk and they read it, it's like, oh my goodness. And they can read what the first two pages, and it's like, I really like this. I want to do just script. So, so, you know, the script.
I think the pitch is good to get interest in the script. Like with bad pitch, they're probably not going to read your script, but, and then it's also, but so it's like good pitch. And then if you have a good script, great. I think if you have a good pitch and your script isn't that great, I think it would depend on, does this producer want to develop it, or are they looking for something to like just finance and take into production?
Right. So you have to do the footwork as a producer, as I'm learning, you know, that you have, and I'm gonna say novice, you know, but you have to get out and do the footwork. And you have to say, you have to be okay with, no, I'm not interested. No, Renee, no. What are you doing now, Renee? No. You know, so you have to get used to the no's with pitching and going through, and then you learn, and then you get yourself ready for the yeses. So I think you just have to practice your pitching, and you just have to get out there, and you have to be okay with, no, I'm not interested. You know, you have to.
No. And people are usually a little nicer. Like, they're not usually saying no. It's more of just like, I'm passing, or like, it's for us right now.
Yeah. So yeah, but you have to be okay as a filmmaker. You have to have June doesn't like a backup plan, but you have to have
a backbone.
Because I know I've been told no, and I remember in the beginning. Yeah, you have to have thick skin, because I know me getting into this industry, my daughter used to be like, Brib, like, Mom, you shouldn't be doing this. If you're going to be always upset when somebody tells you no, you need to get thick skin. And I had to, because if not, I was going to be a wreck. So the no's are okay. And actually now I welcome the no's, and then I go back and say, well, hey, just for my critique and just for me, what made you say no? Was it the script? Was it this or was it that? And I know another script that I had, and I know someone said, well, I felt like your script was underdeveloped. So that was huge. So it was, you know, it was the script, it wasn't me, but it was like the script was underdeveloped, it was this, so maybe, you know, come back, maybe we'll circle back. So that was one of my no's, but then they told me why, and I felt like, okay, I need to fix script. I need to come up with another script. So that was one of my experiences.
Yeah, it is hard to hear the no's, but yes, you're right. I think we like learn and grow from it. Yeah, I was just curious to know, like, what is Heap? What do you guys do? Yeah.
So pretty much Heap is acronym stands for High End Entertainment Production. So we pride ourselves on doing high quality content that's thought provoking, that sparks offline conversation. And that's just what our mission is, to champion, especially women, because we're a hot commodity now in film. So it's to enlighten other women about what we're doing. It's also to give guidance, directions, informative pieces. It's just giving some information for, like she said, a class of people that really, like she said, don't have a seat at the table. So it's giving information, it's giving feedback, it's collaboration with one another. Like just being on here with you, I have learned so much. I've added mm-hmm. to my resource. Other guests that comes on, we learning. So it's like we're creating a learning culture where you're not afraid to share your information. I have found that like certain places that people don't want to share information. It's like, okay, I'm gonna keep my contacts to myself. But here, this is a space that says, no, it's okay. It's enough out here for all of us to, you know, get to reach our goals, to learn about financing, how to learn how to get distribution. And like I said, a lot of times people don't want to share that information. So we decided to create a space that you can get the information, you can get the guidance. If you want to go into entertainment, if it's fashion, film, writing, we want to be a resource and have guests that can kind of give you that place to go, that beacon of light to say, oh, okay, I was just thinking about that, but I didn't know where to go with that. But now I got the information. So that's pretty much part of the collaborative vision that we have.
Well, it's not just the entertainment industry that is,
yes,
it's any business. Because when I started out in the legal field, you know, one of the first things that I was told is that, you know, there's two types of female attorneys. Like there's only two, either the men just bulldoze you and run all over you, or you're the bitch. So there was no like, I can't be a tough or smart or intelligent attorney without being a bitch. So, and then along the way too, is they, what the other main piece of advice I learned is like, enough women aren't helping other women succeed. It's like they gain their information, they've got it, they're holding on tight to it. Where once someone finally told me that, and thank God I learned it like early in my days at the law firms, because I was like 21, 22. And I'm like, why are we doing that? So I completely switched, and I've been helping every secretary, every paralegal, every office clerk or attorney that's come through my office. Like I help them get other jobs. Like even if they weren't the best assistant,
right,
I still gave them the tools to maybe make them a little bit better, or I helped them pass their interview or their online test or whatever I did with them, just to help them get the job or learn how to do it themselves better. And it's like, and how to negotiate raises. Like that was one thing that, you know, we weren't taught at all as females, is you need to know your value, know your worth, and don't just take the 25-cent raise. Like, this is what I bring to the table. You know my work ethic, and I want, you know, I want a couple $1,000 increase on my pay.
Yeah, no, and
to have the confidence to do that. So I have this to back it up, and that's what men do. That's what I learned. That's what they do. So it's like, well, I'm going to pass this on to everybody that I can.
Mm-hmm. And it's a make, and then after, like she said, I do apologize, not just entertainment, it's even the healthcare field, because that's my backbone. And then also I have a degree in science, but it's just to help people in all walks of life. And our goal is, once someone leaves the podcast, is to make them a little bit better. So I have always been that. I have always been a cheerleader for other people more than for myself. Mm-hmm. So it's just, and I know one of my quotes from Zig Ziglar, he always says that if you help enough people get what they need and want, eventually whatever you want, you'll get. So that has always been my mantra, has always been my guiding star, my principle that I go through, that I'm here. That's my mission, to help other people. And then I always get what I want. Renee Page always helps other people, always want to help other people, get in there, get it done and help them. Sometimes I want to help people with their stuff more than they want to. And, but I always get what I want by doing that. And it just makes me feel good to help other people reach their goals, or reach their dreams and things like that. So it's just a vision of the whole team, and the collaboration of the whole team is just to help other people and to brag about other people and be other people's biggest cheerleaders. So I can go on and on and on. So I do apologize, but it just gets me excited to help other people.
That's great.
So sorry.
Thank you guys for doing this.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We should have started with this rapid fire question at the beginning. I keep getting it wrong, whether it's at the top, the end. So we just have like some quick questions. First thing that pops into your head, make it rapid fire or don't make it rapid fire, but that's just the segment. Okay. What's your favorite book?
I think The Dutch House. It's a recent read, so it's just at the top of my head right now.
Okay. What's it about?
It's about these two siblings and their relationship with like the home that they grew up in and how it kind of changes them as people.
Mm. Okay. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Put that on the list.
Yeah. We do a book club now too. So I'm learning how to read.
Yes. Yes.
If you could have coffee with one person, who would it be?
Barack Obama.
Wow.
Nice choice. Man. We heard, I think, was it Michelle the other day?
Yeah. Yeah, Michelle. Somebody. So the Rock family, yeah. The Obamas are very coffee-oriented people that people want to have coffee with.
One day someone's going to say Jerry Seinfeld. I don't know.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
I'll put him on my list.
Yes.
What's the number one best investment you made in 2021 under $100?
2021 under $100. Oh, a blender when I went to Pakistan, because I was like, I need to make smoothies. And
yes. Oh my goodness. I make my acai bowls all the time. Mm. Okay. Your number one piece of advice for self-care.
Slow down and like, I don't know what these are called when horses have these, but like those little horse eye blinders, like don't worry about what other people are doing. Like slow down and worry about yourself.
Yeah. Good advice.
That's hard for a lot of people to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great advice.
If you could switch careers tomorrow, what would you try?
I'd want to be an entrepreneur, like somebody who was like creating something from like the ground up, like, I don't know, like a cool new business idea or something.
Mm-hmm. Like a product or a clothing line.
Yeah.
Or service.
Okay. What's the first thing you do every morning?
The first thing I do every morning is so bad and I need to change it, but I check my phone. Shame.
Instagram.
Yeah.
TikTok.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
TikTok.
Yeah.
Everyone does that, I think.
My dogs are away with me. They're like, my dogs are visiting my parents in Texas. So I just wake up and look for dog videos from.
Oh my gosh. I look at the cat videos.
Yeah.
What's your favorite podcast?
I have to be really honest. I'm not a podcast listener.
Oh, me neither.
I'm going to like actually look up my Spotify. Because there was a podcast I really liked and I'm not going to remember what it's called. It's about this like woman who like makes empanadas and also commits murders. And it was just like a fun listen.
Oh, like a storytelling thing.
Like my fiction podcasts.
Oh yeah. Those are becoming more and more popular. Okay, well, we thank you for being our leading lady today, Apoorva, and we hope you enjoyed your time. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you, if you want to produce something together, work on a project, how can people get in touch with you?
To get in touch with me for producing projects, ask Joel for my email address. I think that would be the best way. Just
okay.
Professional stuff. Otherwise, I'm on Instagram. And yeah, at Apoorva GC. That is the best way to find me and keep in touch.
Okay.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in this week's episode. For more of our content, you can follow us on our social media at HeapEnt. That's HEEPENT. And if you have feedback, suggestions, collab pitches, or anything you want to tell us, you can reach out to our team at HeapEnt@gmail.com. And until next time, thanks for tuning in.